Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
This is Marcus.
And before getting into today's episode, we wanted to let you know that this is a special week for the show. We'll be heading to the FinCon conference in San Diego, where money meets media. It's also the first time we'll be meeting in person. I'd say it's exciting, but you know, we got to play it cool like the pies are on us, you know.
Well, I really have no idea how it's going to go. You know, this will be my opportunity to prove or disprove that you are a catfish. So I look forward to that and updating the people on what the case may be. And with it being a special week, we decided it's a good time to launch an Instagram account. We're back on the grams. Y'all voted for us to be there. So there it shall be. You can follow us with the same name, Pay Balances, just like Twitter.
Yeah, and it's going to be the best way to keep up with the conference shenanigans in terms of photos and videos. Of course, we'll be on Twitter too. Yeah, we're gonna have to be on like all the platforms. We're gonna have to figure out how to split this stuff up. I guess we'll talk about that when we actually meet, or maybe beforehand. I don't know, but regardless, we expect it to be lit. Are the kids still saying that these days? Is lit still appropriate? I feel like I still see it from people that appear to be cool.
Yeah, I think it's still out there. I think I used Yas past its expiration date the other day. I feel like people aren't using that anymore. I tried to put it in the text. Actually, I tried to put it in the snap, and I feel like it didn't go over as quickly as I would have liked. You know, I think even when somebody gets something, they're like, huh, and then they don't respond. I'm like, okay, well, I guess Yas isn't lit no more. So I think lit's still in the vernacular. I think Yas is officially old school.
Yeah. For a while, I was saying Yas. And it's like, nah, someone corrected me. It was like, it's Yas. I'm like, not Yas, nah, Yas, Yas. I was like, all right, I'm just not going to say that altogether. I'm just going to keep it to myself in my head.
Yeah, man, life is passing us by.
Yeah, it happens. And Instagram, for me, I mean, you've done video stuff before. I won't plug all of that because you probably don't want people to go and find it all. But
people who know you to know, and those who don't know, don't need to know.
Pretty much. But for me, my first foray in the video, I know I'm kind of using Snapchat as the playground for all of the informal stuff. And it's not to say that I'm being overly formal anywhere else, but I feel like there's less pressure versus Instagram, where, you know, I got to go out and get the fresh beard edge up because I can't do that on the top of my head. And I know you were talking about, actually, yeah, I think you actually went and got a cut before you would post something on the gram.
Yeah, I was not about to go out there, especially in my first reintroduction to the Instagrams, and just have my hairline on, not fleek. So, I was on Snapchat, you know, promoting the book, promoting the video, promoting the website. But then you were like, yo, you going to drop something on the gram? I'm like, hold up, Playboy. Let me see what my barber's talking about. You know, I hit him up. I was like, yo, man, he want me to put something on the gram. I need to get in for the emergency cut. He's, yo, I understand. Slide in. I got hit with the Instagram. I got hit with the taper fade. Then I hit with the Instagram. Searched through about 37 different filters. Finally broke it down to two. Spent 26 minutes jumping between the two and adjusting filters in the background. And eventually I dropped what I think was my best photo.
Yeah, it'd be like that, man. I did post some foolishness on the Instagram. I was just like home and I was celebrating that it was Friday, and I was like, we'll see how this goes. And I'm guessing if there was a thumbs down feature, probably would have got a few of those, but I was like, forget it. I'm rocking out. I'm having fun. So catch us on the gram at Pay Balances. Catch us on the snaps, Mr. Marcus, M-I-S-T-E-R, and I am Rich Jones. And also, after the conference, we'll be doing some type of recap episode, because I'm sure we're going to talk to a lot of awesome people. We're going to get a lot of insight about a lot of different things, and I'm sure there'll be some foolishness that we'll be able to capture in person that we wouldn't have been able to capture otherwise. So definitely looking forward to that. And I imagine we're going to come back and be very, very tired, my friend.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll be hashtag Wash Chronicles all over again. Thank y'all for the listens. Thank y'all for the support. Thank you for the likes. Thank you for the downloads. Thank you for everything. And on with the episode.
Indeed. Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we talk all things work and money, with the hope we don't leave you saying GTFOHWTBS.
Yes, sir. And just a reminder, the book is out, Debt Free or Die Trying, which you can find at debtfreeordietrying.com, Amazon, or the most easiest link, paychecksandbalances.com/debtfree.
Indeed. So make sure you cop that hard copy, that manual book. It's out there in the streets, ready for people to consume that knowledge and also have a good laugh at your expense, because you did tell some stories, man. You said things in that book that I didn't even know you'd done. You know, you had given me versions of how you spent money in the past, and I was like, nah, he's not really spending that crazily. But like, you actually did. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, I think people will see why I'm so hesitant to, you know, put the book out, because I'm like, why? Like, why would anybody listen to me? But then I realized something while I was going through this. It might have come up in a conversation with my pops, and I was like, you know, the only thing, I mean, like, my only expertise is that I spend ridiculous amount of money and then I stop. And then I thought about it and I was like, you know, most people don't stop.
Yeah.
That is the expertise. I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop doing this. Most people just stay on that roller coaster. I just hopped off. That's what the book is about. So at least that's how I've made peace with it.
Definitely.
Hope y'all enjoy.
Yeah. So again, paychecksandbalances.com/debt-free to get your copy of the book. And also thanks to everyone who's left us 5-star reviews on iTunes for September. I know we mentioned the folks who left us 5-star reviews for August. So far this month, we have reviews from Michael3B, K Greenwich, Ayajade, Black Feminist Yuppie in New Hampshire, JReal83, Silky1, and Adriana Marissa. Now, I was supposed to say that a lot faster, but I got really tripped up by that third name there. But nonetheless, appreciate the 5-star reviews. And if you've been enjoying the show, make sure you drop by on iTunes, hit us with the 5 stars, keeps us relevant in the rankings. And if you don't see your name there yet, it's because we don't see it there yet. So do hold. I'm sure we'll come back with a list of other names later this month, assuming people actually want to leave us a review, which we hope they keep doing.
And I do want to point out that you got so excited there. It was actually Black Female Yuppie in New Hampshire. I think NH is New Hampshire. And you broke this down for me. What's the difference between Yuppie and Buppy?
Well, Yuppie is young urban professional and Buppy is Black urban professional.
There you go.
That's just
folks.
Like the short phrase for it. So there
changing
it is.
Changing lives. And you can tweet along to today's episode using hashtag or pound PayBal. And you can also add us directly at PayBalances.
For shizzle, my friend. So anyway, we have a money minute for today. And then we also got a little something to talk about after that. But yeah, to get started, I'm going to turn it over to you.
I'm running the clock, folks. So I'm going to try to keep it at more than a minute, but around 5 minutes. So if you want to start the clock as well, no pressure.
I need that 60-minute sound effect.
I'm going to call this money minute. More money, more work. I had a recent aha moment, and I was trying to break down somebody's or talk to somebody about breaking down their budget. And I said something that I realized was actually a two-part struggle. You can either spend less money than you make, or you can make more money than you spend. And so most people are going to see that as two sides of the same coin. Ooh, I almost butchered that metaphor because I didn't have it written down. And I actually think it's different. And I think most people, when they think of money, they're like, how can I make more? How can I make more? So the most frequently asked question I get is, how can I make more money? Sometimes, but less often, I get the, how can I save more money? And it's sister and or cousin from another mother. How am I currently spending my money, or am I currently spending my money in the wisest way possible? Yes.
I was going to say, I think we've only gotten the how can I save more money question like once, unless it was specific to 401k. We've definitely seen several versions of the how do I make more?
Yeah, I don't think it occurs to most people that you can also cut back on your current expenses.
Isn't that such an idea?
It's novel, and it goes back to that saying, like, you know, what did I do different? I stopped. given the age, goal, and income. And then I just kind of had an observation. Most people don't want to, and I get it, you don't want to adjust the lifestyle that they're currently accustomed to. It's hard for people to go backwards. You know, once you've been chasing the Joneses, so to speak, I don't know if the Joneses needs to be replaced. I actually don't even know where the Joneses comes from. I don't even know who the Joneses are. But assuming we are still chasing them, it's hard to get off that racetrack. I mean, when you start buying new things, you get the increases in pay, the increases in title, the increases in status, you feel that you need all these gadgets. I mean, we were talking, not to put your business out there, but yeah, we were talking in the black box discussion about the iPhones, the merits of the iPhone 7 and the 6S and the Galaxy and the Sky and the Android. And at the end of the day, I think, well, it's difficult for me. You know, I have a 6 Plus, and I was telling you that I'm not getting a 7. Like, yeah. First of all, I haven't even paid off the 6 Plus yet. I literally make my 24th payment in November. I thought my grandchildren were going to be paying off this phone for a while. So I feel like I should somehow reward myself for those 24 months of payment. So if out of principle, I'm just not going to get a new phone. But I think millennials, us, young people, old people, I don't know, but you just... It feels weird to say I'm not going to get a new phone after 2 years. And I don't know if that's entitlement or being realistic. I really don't know. But I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to spend another. I don't remember how much I paid for this phone. I was like, just put it on the bill. I'm pretty sure it's like $700, $900 when Apple was swooping everyone in under that no contract.
Yeah. It's probably a strong seven.
Yeah, we're doing it for the customer gimmick. And, you know, it feels like a punishment to take away, and it feels good, like a reward to keep, even if it's outside of our means. Yeah. And I realize that people are actually more willing, because that's the first way they think, to work harder and longer than cut back on what they are currently spending, even if it's only temporary sacrifice, now, which is something I tried to emphasize.
Now, I see a lot of people who ask, how do they make more money? But then they also don't want to do the work required to make that money.
Right. And I talk about that, and I'll try not to become this guy, but I do talk about that in the book, because I'm in this weird place, and I think you could probably relate, where I'm trying, being young is starting to become distant and as far as in my head. So I'm like, someone's like, hey, I saw a question on Twitter, for example, the other day. I think it was Reagan Gomez, actually. She said, what were you doing at 19? I have no idea. Like, I could barely, you know how long, like, I almost got a headache thinking about what was going on in my life at 19. I had to do all kinds of math. I was like, all right, I graduated high school.
So I must ate have been a lot.
Yeah, I'd been 1 year removed. I could not even remotely remember. So when I try to, one of the difficult things about the book, or answering questions about the book, and you can relate to this from the podcast, is someone's like, hey, yeah, that was a funny story. What was that thing you did in 2003? And I'm like, man, yo, pass me the book. Let's read it together. Because I barely remember what I talk about on this show. I have literally recorded this show, turned around and sat on my couch, and people have called and say, so what y'all talk about today? And I'm like, man, let me look at the notes.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know. So I saw this quote, which will be in this week's newsletter, 19 Secrets of Your Millionaire Neighbor. And although it's possible to get rich if you spend your life making a living doing something you don't enjoy, we wonder why you would. Life is too short. And it's almost cliche, you know, the youth is, or wisdom or energy is wasted on the youth, that now I'm like looking back and I'm like, you know, and I've talked about this before, I don't know that I would change anything. I'm definitely glad that I did get out of debt. I don't know that I would change anything about doing that. That was something I'm very proud of, and I'm glad I did, and I want to help other people do the same. But now that I'm quote unquote older, I also think there's a balancing act that I failed at as far as enjoying life. Because now that I'm back home, I have a better work-life balance. I'm seeing my friends and family, and my budget is being tested by more peer pressure than it ever did when I was, you know, two states away from all my family and friends.
Yeah, people got more money now too.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Where a lot of us have come up in our means and our abilities, and I've had to say no. Like, I didn't have to say no. That wasn't even a conversation I had to have when I was in Colorado. If I didn't want to spend money, I'm just like, all right, I'm going to stay home and watch TV and chill. Now I might have to tell 10, 15 family, friends, like, if I want to chill, I got to turn 10 to 15, 20 people down. And there's peer groups who are chilling one weekend when other peer groups are turning up. No, it's just, there's always something going on.
Yeah.
And I've been surprised by that. Like, it's a pressure that I didn't know would exist. And then I had to be sympathetic to that, because I'm also trying to think, how can I speak to people and keep it real and be empathetic to the real situations that they're going through? Like, what I'm dealing with now, and it's a good thing. I mean, I'm glad that I'm home and I'm surrounded by people to have this, you know, first world problem, is a reality that other people have been dealing with their whole lives and will deal with their whole lives. And being a young person, like an early 20 something.
Yeah, this is basically the millennial struggle. You know, when you read a lot of these articles, they talk about the whole, like you said up front, keeping up with the Joneses and trying to be out in the mix and trying to show that you can floss and that you want to be in the background of that selfie and of that Instagram pic and of that now Snapchat story. But which I must say, by the way, I am becoming more thoroughly entrenched in Snapchat. I can see why the young people like it, even though like I'm on the cusp of not being part of that crowd.
Honestly, I wasn't going to say anything, but I have seen you showing up in the snaps a little bit more often. So I was like, oh, he must be getting familiar with the technology. I, too, have joined the snaps, but I have not snapped yet for a couple reasons. I already have enough addictions as far as social media goes. And I honestly just think I'm a little intimidated. I don't want to snap the wrong thing. Didn't what's his name put the wrong thing out there, Usher or whatever. So I don't want to be like, you know, what does this button do? And then, you know, I go viral and you know how it goes, viral on Friday, fired on Monday.
Yeah. At I am Rich Jones on Snapchat. If you want to follow, just had to throw that out there. I'm trying to get my follower game up. This Sweet 16 is not the business.
Well, since you're putting it out there, I guess I'll do the same. I'm Mr. Marcus, M-I-S-T-E-R, Marcus, and y'all can follow or not follow, because I haven't snapped yet. I joined, but I'm just a snap creeper now. I just watch other people's snaps, and then I leave. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with the Snapchats yet.
Be there for the first, but anyway.
So the money making tends to be finite, and that's a reality. You can make more money. You can work yourself doing so. You can work yourself to death doing so. And I did. Like I'm not preaching to the choir. I'm talking to myself, you know, working 2-3 jobs. I worked nights at a hotel job. It was actually the most interesting 1-week job I've ever had in my entire life. It is insane what goes on at hotels at nights, but I'm sure y'all can imagine.
Yeah, I can.
And whereas living within your means is a lifestyle change, but you can practice it over time and it benefits you for the entirety of your life. This fallacy that I think many of us have that I'll always make more money, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of work. My dad actually told me a quote that I really only got recently. You have to work really hard to get to a point where you hardly work. And I'm still in the working really hard part. Like I get frustrated sometimes. I'm like, man, I should be done. I have worked my butt off. And no, that's just not how any of this works. And the arc, which we've talked about, we actually talked about this on the first episode. I actually had to do the research because I don't remember what we talk about. And your career and money arc for the average man and woman comes at you fast. We discussed this on episode. I'll link to this in the show notes, but it's Paycheck Plateau. If you want to look it up. The fact that a professional's wages stagnate by age 35 shouldn't come as much of a surprise. It is just the idea of career trajectory. And that's a quote from Lydia Frank, director of marketing at Salary Resource Payscale. So I assume she knows what she's talking about because she's quoted in Forbes. When you reach a pretty high level on your career path, there may not be any new levels to reach out to, or they are difficult to get to. Specifically, what she's talking about is the average woman's salary peaks at 39. The average man's salary peaks at 48. Life comes at you fast. And that tells me, or you are the person listening, that you don't always make more money, or doing so becomes exponentially more difficult over time. Not because you're not, well, actually because you are already making more money.
Yeah.
Basically what you're chasing makes it more difficult to continue to chase.
Yeah. It's also interesting too, because let's say you are someone that's climbing the corporate ladder, and you may have seen this yourself since you went from being an individual contributor to a manager, but as you move up in level, there are less positions that are available, which creates more competition for fewer jobs. Would you say that that's accurate? It's kind of like as you move kind of up the ranks with management, there's fewer manager jobs as you kind of keep going along.
Yeah, I know some organizations are trying to, what is it called, flattening the organization now. But most organizations, by nature of hierarchy, are a pyramid. You're working your way up. There's more staff at the bottom. And as you work your way up in title, there's less and less and less. There's usually about double on span of control. Like, so if you have, just to make it simple, if you have 10 staff, there's probably going to be 5 managers. Those 5 managers are going to probably have 2 deputies, and then there's going to be 1 director. That's a pyramid. That's just how it works. So as you move your way up that chain of command, it's more difficult and there's more key people competing for smaller boxes.
Yeah, which is going to lead to that kind of tapering off of the income that you were talking about. So it's a good point there.
So that's my money minute. More money, more work. So it is possible to make more money. And I do want to be fair. I will try to be covering both on the shows because I know that's something that people are interested in. But I also would ask that people maybe take a step back and, you know, really be outcome focused. Is it more money that you want? Is that what's going to make you happier, or do you just need to have more resources available? Because that might be an exercise in coming back and learning to live within your means. And that is, again, something you can practice and do for the entirety of your life, not just limited to your paychecks or your balances.
There we go. And honestly, man, I think people really just want to be able to do more things. And or that word that I like to talk about, freedom. That's really what it boils down to, is people want to have less constraints, but it's kind of like, you can't have freedom if you don't do certain things up front to put yourself in a position to have that. So it's like you can't be, I guess a lot of people would feel like you can't be saving and earning more and then at the same time also be free.
I agree. And I also think the term that we've used and is pretty common is people's lifestyle creep or inflation usually outpaces their paychecks. So not only they're living paycheck to paycheck, you get a 10% raise and then you go out and buy a $40,000 car. And then you get a 10% raise and you go out and buy a $250,000 house. Thus, the purchases you're making with your raise are not only eating up your raise, they're eating up the paycheck that you had before that if you were living paycheck to paycheck. And that's why I think if you can get into the mental exercise, and sometimes I have to take a step back, and it's something I continue to refine over time, is generally, I've been tracking my budget for probably about 10 years now. I've gotten more serious about it and refined it and got it more accurate in the last 5 or 4 years. But the point for me is it's probably easier than for me to know where my money's going. Like, now, don't get me wrong. I'll wake up, I'll be at the club, and I'll be like, you know what? This is over the budget. Charge it, you know, rain. But I know it. Whereas most people just rain, and then they wake up the next morning like, what happened?
Yeah. Like,
you know, it's not the exercise of not doing it. It's not being perfect or being perfect. It's the pursuit of perfection. So there are simple changes I know I can make, and I've probably maximized the majority of them. I talked about this when one of our listeners specifically wrote into the show. They are correct. You can only cut back on so many expenses, and then what do you do? But I would say the same thing is true about income. You can generally, within reason, only make so much money as well until like the next big thing comes along where that might be a raise, that might be a transfer. We've talked about that. Most people's biggest raise doesn't come from pay increases. It comes from another job.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, some people, they think about the whole diversifying income streams and investing in stocks, but it's like it takes money to make that happen. Even to go and do your own thing, which we're going to talk about in a minute, it takes money to be able to generate money, which I think people sometimes forget that too when they're thinking of stuff outside of their day job.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's very helpful, and I'm going to try to develop a tool, hashtag hint, that will help people, if not outright manage it, at least visualize where their money is going. Because then I really think people are underestimating the, I'm trying to run this through my PC brain. their own responsibility and choices that they're making. Because first of all, I think you have to see where your money is going, how you're spending it. I've talked to some friends where we've walked through their budget. I'm like, okay, they usually don't have one. I'm like, well, kind of tell me about your bills and expenses, which is, you know, an exercise that they haven't done. So even that's difficult. They have to think about it. And then I just ask them, you know, is that the best use of your money is really what it boils down to. You know, look, if I was you, I, you know, reconsider this. Maybe you can cut back on this. Have you talked to your insurance company to cut back on that? Hey, I don't think you blatantly need this. Hey, you're wasting money here. And I'm not telling people, hey, it's your budget. It's your money. You do whatever you want with your money. I will continue to practice and preach that. But I do think it's a separate exercise to take a step back and say, month to month, is this the best way I should be using my money based on my goals, my age, and my income?
Yeah, you just reminded me of something. Well, it was something you said like 2 minutes ago that just came back because you reminded me, then I lost it, then got it back again. And I'm almost losing it because I spent so long talking about it. All right, got it. I think one of the things that I did in my 20s that if I was looking back was probably really unnecessary is I got a pay increase and then I moved into a bigger spot, even though it was just me. Like it was like a, you know, I think when I first moved to Boston after school, I had two roommates. Cool. I got a pay increase. What did I do? And actually, yeah, it was a pay increase and a new job. What did I do? I went and got like a 1,000 square foot spot. Now, that may sound like a brag, but it's not because, yo, after that second lease renewal, I had no choice but to move. Like living there was actually causing me to spend even more money per month than what I was bringing in. So, and I think that's something that a lot of people do. They go, oh man, I'm in this small spot. You know, it's not floss, ball out. You know, it's not the true bachelor pad that I've been thinking about or bachelorette pad. And so people get a little bit more money and they move into a bigger spot when, you know, had maybe they stayed for another year and save some of that extra money and then made that leap to a new spot, it may not have had the financial impact that it did from, you know, just doing that as soon as you got a pay increase. So I look back on that and I was like, yo, this is great. You know, I got all this empty space. I got walls with no pictures on it, space with no dressers in it, closets with like that aren't even filled all the way through, but it looks like I'm balling though. You know, up to the point that I spent so much on rent that I was like, all right, I got to get out of this lease, and ended up moving back in with a friend. So that's something to watch out for too if you're out there doing the solo thing.
Yeah, and I'm going to give an example and then I'm going to make a comment. So I did the same thing but in a different way, cuz I usually cannot find enough to do with my 700 or 500 square feet. So I got all kinds of white space that people make fun of. I think I finally hung some pictures because of a guilt trip I got in a previous relationship. But that being said, my thing was, and I think people can relate to this. I don't know if you can so much, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but you tell me you don't wear suits. I remember I got a promotion and then I was like, oh man, I need a bunch of stunner suits. And I need to go out here to Men's Warehouse, like the commercial. So I bought like thousands of dollars worth of suits. And I ended up wearing those suits like twice a year. Like I just, in my head, man, I thought that now I'm like, I need to be Brooks brothered up, but I didn't. And what I noticed now, I don't know these people's financial history outside of the job, but most of the people who were even at least above me, so I have to definitely assume they were more better paid than me, they have one sports coat that they would change out. I mean, they'd switch up the suit tie. You know, everybody got some people's shoes and socks, but they would, as far as jackets go, they're just like, look, man, I'll throw a jacket on when I need a jacket. And when I don't, I'm a chill. And I'm like, man, I spent thousands. And I mean, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but as I talked about on another show, you know, $2,000 expenditure at, I forget what they said, 15% APR. If you pay the minimum, that's like, it's
amount of money.
Yeah, I think it was 28 years. Like it was like you can pay $2,000 if you make a minimum payment on a credit card for like the rest of your life. And it's those bulk one-off expenditures that haunt you for long periods of time. They continue to haunt me. Those are the stories I tell in the book, is I'd be responsible for months. Sometimes I'd be responsible for years. And then I'd go out and just do something really dumb that cost me multiple thousands of dollars. And for some reason in my head, I'm like, I'll just pay it off next month. Based on what? I don't know. It wasn't math, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Thinking back to that experience, though, like that was how I learned how to sublet. Like, yo, for real, it was so bad that I was like, yo, I got to sublet and get out of this lease so I can live somewhere that's less expensive. Don't be me. Please don't be me. Live literally within your means. Those walls around you, those are your means. Live within them.
And I think that's actually a good segue here. So what we talked about on another show, but it will tie to this topic, is I think it's helpful, and most people don't, it's not a natural exercise to go through, to have a personal vision or mission statement. So most of the companies and businesses and organizations that we either work for or do business with on a day-to-day, if you go to their website, they have vision and mission statements. But to do that for yourself personally, because then you can take a step back and say, okay, my vision statement for, and it could be for this month, for this year, whatever the case is to save $500.
Yeah.
And then when you're out at the club or the Men's Warehouse and you're about to charge a $1,000 suit, you can step back and say, wait a minute, does this $1,000 purchase I'm about to make align with that vision statement I have for this month to save $500, because any action that doesn't move me in the direction of that vision statement is now derailing me from my own vision.
So helpful. So yeah. Helpful, man.
I think it's real grounding, and I put one together for the website, and I'm still trying to develop like a personal one, but I do think the website one is going to help me. And even going through the exercise of developing one for the website was helpful. And someone recommended to me that it should be, to start with, your goal should be 6 words. We talked about that, the 6-word story. So summarize whatever you're trying to do in 6 words, not because it's right, wrong, or indifferent, because that will focus you. It keeps you straight and to the point. But for the purposes of maybe your vision or mission statement, maybe it's 140 characters for the Twitter users out there. But something focused. I mean, your vision statement shouldn't be like a 3,000-word epiphany that you're going to accomplish over the next 2 years. That's not what I'm saying here. It should be narrowed. It should be focused. It should be specific. And it should ground you.
Yeah, I was doing some work on that again this week. These past couple of weekends, I've been all up in the whiteboard, just doing all of these exercises, trying to make sure that everything is still aligned. And I'd done it a few months ago, but it actually helped me decide to not spend money on something. But then at the same time, there was something else that I was thinking about not spending money on that I was like, you know what? I should get this now because it's going to make life easier down the road. So I'm going to suck this up, but I'm not going to spend on that other thing. So it's like, even though money went out the door, I still know what I did spend on, like, truly is aligned with where I'm trying to go. And it's not like what I said in the other episode, like me trying to justify getting a smart doorbell for like $200. It was legitimately something that I needed that's going to help me in terms of my own business goals and my own financial goals. And I'm like, you know what? This is a good expense. And I can walk away from that, seeing my bank account being a little bit lower, but at the same time, knowing that I did something that's moving me closer to where I want to be. So,
and you said something there as far as alignment goes that I really want to emphasize is, I think a lot of folks were instantaneous. We react, you know, based on, you know, instant gratification. So another thing or exercise that I go through a lot, and I've been trying to refine, but especially when I was going through getting out of debt, was, do I need this now? And you would be surprised when I could answer no to that question. And then, you know, 3 months later, if I've gone without it for 3 months, sometimes I'm like, you know what? I don't need it at all, because I didn't even think I thought I couldn't go an hour without this. And I just take a step back. I'm like, all right, let me try to go a day without it. And then let me try to go a week, and then a month. And then it just gets to a point where, like, man, I've lived without this thing this long. Maybe I don't even need it at all. That yeah. was a true impulse buy that felt like a need at the time, that was really a want over the true trajectory of, I guess I'll say, life.
Yeah. And before we move on, I'll ask people to think about, because I know I have stuff like this. You probably have stuff like this too. Those things that we think are needs, we buy them. We use them for a few weeks, and then we're going to move or something else changes. And then we come across that thing and we're like, I bought this like a year ago and I've used it like 6 times. You know, it's kind of like a gym membership in January. You know, people go for like those first few weeks and then not go the rest of the year, then look at their statement and realize they've been billed for like 11 months that they haven't used a membership. A lot of times we buy stuff that we think it's critical to have, but then we find ourselves not using it a few months later. I think I even did that with some wireless headphones. I'm not sure how I justified it in my head. I was like, I really got to get these wireless headphones. They're going to allow me to be mobile, walk the halls, and not talk to people. And used them for a few months, then they disappeared for a few months, but I have started using them again. So just keep that in mind for some of those things that you can probably also sell and maybe get a few bucks for. But yeah, that was our money segment, I'll call it, you know, since it was a bit more than a minute. But we got something else we wanted to talk about today that I think is related to this, and this idea that you're introducing of don't quit your day job, which I guess isn't a new idea, but we're going to try to give this some fresh perspective.
Yeah. So the tagline from this story is, whatever you do, don't quit your day job to pursue your passion, written by someone who quit their day job to pursue their passion. So I guess she's knowledgeable in this topic. I'll link to it in the show notes. It's from QZ.com.
I think it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Quartz. So the website is Quartz, but it's QZ.com. And the author, Janelle Kibian?
Son of a gun. It's Quartz. All right. Well,
I mean, it says it right at the bottom of the page, bro.
The man wins again. I was looking at the link. So why I like this piece, I'll quote it. I'm successful, but it feels like sometimes society or specific individuals make you feel like a loser. I imagine that's how she would say it. And sell out if you work a 9-to-5, collect a check every 2 weeks, and work for the man or the woman, to be politically correct. And I think that summarizes it. I think you and I had an offline conversation, and it was kind of weird and existential, where we were trying to figure out, have we crossed over into entrepreneurial yet? Yeah. Are we entrepreneurs? I really don't know. Like, I don't know the gray line between, and I feel like we're walking the tightrope in that we have the 9-to-5. You've come out of the closet at your 9-to-5.
I guess that's what you want to. So there are people who are probably listening for the first time, and it's like, oh, that's great. You know, I'm glad you're in tune with your sexuality. That's not what I'm talking about. I basically
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, of course. All-inclusive podcast, hashtag diversity. But for years, I hadn't told my job or any of my jobs, because I've actually had, I think, two jobs in the time we've been doing this show, that about the podcast. Or people maybe knew I had a podcast, but they didn't know what the name of it was, and they had never listened to it. And recently, I came out and was like, yo, here's my podcast. Here's how it's doing. Here's what it's about. If you want to listen to it, go ahead. I'm open to feedback. And I think I got to a point where I was like, yo, this is something that's really important to me, something I see myself doing for the long term. And I'm tired of hiding something that I'm so proud of. So I finally went to work and told colleagues about it, told managers about it, and got a pretty warm response to that. But yo, that was like the first step for me of being like, you know what, there's a greater vision in play, and it's time for me to start owning that more publicly. Now I feel like I just like stood up at a podium with like lecturer hand and said that, so I'm just going to retreat back to my seat.
If I had access to the board, I'd do put the screaming children right there, but unfortunately I do not, so you'll just have to accept my esteemed apologies. But from the piece, and then I'll talk about my thoughts here. She says, I don't want to perpetuate this false narrative of quitting a job because I was brave enough to pursue my passion. I don't want anyone who works a 9-to-5 to feel like a fool for staying at a stable job or feel wrong for actually enjoying it. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. I enjoy it from time to time, usually from 12 to 1.
I was going to say 5 to 6 on the way home.
I want people to know that nearly all the overnight entrepreneur success stories in the spotlight leave out the privilege afforded to them in the first place. Not everyone can or should just quit their jobs in hopes of finding happiness or meaningful work.
Damn.
So
right.
I had a kind of question to myself, or maybe a question for the listeners, and that was, how do you go into work for yourself? Because I don't know if I've been working for myself. I guess I had. I mean, I think I have a higher work propensity than most folks. But I mean, I think I get it from my pops, but I just define myself through work, which is both good and bad. So I don't mind working all the time. I just have physically gotten tired out. So I'm like, is there a way where I can maintain this, you know, lifestyle I've become accustomed to, this compensation I've been accustomed to, but the 4-hour work week or the 4-day work week or whatever the case is, I just don't want to work this much forever.
Which I definitely understand. But before we go on, so you say that you define yourself through work, and I was kind of like, huh, say more about that.
I just see myself as being successful, a better person, more well-rounded, and when I'm a workaholic. So it's a catch-22. Like when I don't have, and you've probably seen this in different comments I've made on the show, when I'm not heavily involved in something, I have my hands in a bunch of different stuff, then I start to get in, I wouldn't call it depressed, but I'm not in a good mood because I'm like, I'm not valued. People don't want me.
Whereas when
I'm overwhelmed and I'm like, my back's against the wall and all the haters are coming out like, yeah, I knew you were going to fail. I'm like, you know, I got to hit them with the designer, you know, and make the comeback, like the comeback kid. But that is starting to get old over the years. And then also, I don't think it's probably the best use of my time, because now I'm getting into this point or this place where I'm like, okay, I'm doing well. I'm in a good position, relatively speaking. I've accomplished some things over the years that I want to hit on the checklist, but I didn't reach the fountain of happiness that I thought I would, the peak of happiness that I thought I would when I got to the top of this mountain.
Yeah. And it's usually not there, even when you're doing everything right. Because, I mean, the one thing I'll say, and just kind of my thoughts on this, is when you're, I guess, when you're putting a lot of the happiness, for lack of a better term, or purpose into something that's ultimately controlled by someone else, they have the power to pull that away at any point in time.
Agreed.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free, 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 free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out.
And I think, you know, having not had, and maybe that's the maturity that comes with age, time, or experience, having not had that vision or mission statement that I talked about, I was kind of just going through the motions. Thus, when I got to the end of the race, or to a point in the race that felt like the end, I wasn't happy with the outcome because I was pursuing, I was putting my energy in the wrong outcome anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And what I kind of have here is I don't know what it's like to work for myself unless I've been doing it and I don't realize it, but I've gotten great advice from people who do work for themselves and make a lot of money working for themselves. And that's why I think it's important for the, again, I reemphasize, you know, I hit this from every few shows, is the networking and mentoring, because I recognize sometimes I know my box. I can think outside of my box, but sometimes I don't know there's another box that even exists.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just think it's a meaningful exercise to talk to individuals who are doing something that I find interesting that I either don't understand, I would like to do, or the position I want to be in. Because I've recognized, I don't know if you've seen this, that some people just think wholly differently than me. I'm going to take a whole episode to talk about a conversation I was having with another friend about their friend who they said quits jobs every 2 years. No matter where they are, no matter how happy they are, every 365 days times two, they say, I'm going to start looking for other work. And now they're in a position where they can do that. They're in a position where they also are wanted in other industries. And I'm not going to go into all the details, but that mindset is insane to me. Like, I like so much structure and I like my check showing up every 2 weeks or 4 weeks as the case may be now, that the idea of just, I'm going to quit and I'm going to figure it out, that blows my mind. Like, I can't even fathom it. But now I'm starting to think, I'm like, you know, maybe those people are onto something.
Yeah. I mean, it's a selfish move. And of course it goes against some of that, you know, you got to be around for X number of years, which we've talked about. But in a way, if let's say, and I don't know if this is what this person is doing, but let's say they know that by changing jobs every 2 years, they're going to see an increase in salary. They may be doing that to help them get to whatever their ultimate goal is quicker.
I think it's a couple of those things. I think it's also just I think they just have the attitude that they want to avoid stagnation. That is not a reflection of the job. And she said something to me, and I'll go into all the details because I have the notes somewhere else, that just resonated with me, that her friend said to her was, you know what, I leave jobs when I want to. I'm not going to sit around until they let me go.
Mm. Yeah, and so they're taking control.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. Like you... Not usually. I mean, if you know, in an ideal world, you work for 40 years and you retire, they give you a gold watch and they send you off to with a retirement plan. But how often does that happen these days? What more likely happens to us is you work, you give your all to a company that you think you're getting mutual benefit from. And then one day they announce via anonymous email or Facebook status update, hey, we laid off your division.
Yeah.
you and 10,000 of your colleagues, friends and peers no longer have jobs on Monday. You know, good luck.
Or... they lay off other people and then you now get stuck in a job or in a role where you're doing like six people's work and it's not the same position you signed up for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also not desirable.
Right. And I think that's a real reality. And another conversation I had with a mentor of mine was when I was actually feeling guilty. I mean, I think, you know, as I talked about that work propensity, I was feeling guilty about looking for other work. And like I told you, it's like having an affair when you're looking for work on the side. And he told me, he's like, you know what, going back to what you said, I'd been there for a while at that time. He said, you know what, they have gotten their investment out of you. There is no guilt to be had here. And, you know, if they do not like that you're looking for other opportunities to better your life, then that's a reflection of them, not you.
Right.
You have what they have invested in you as an employee. And I think they say it's like 2 years. So if you put in about roughly 2 years, which is where I think that comes from, you and the company have broken even.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that first year, you're basically learning all of the processes and systems. You're basically going through a full business cycle. And of course, there are things you pick up a lot sooner than that. But that second year is when you really hit your stride and hopefully you make some real tangible impact. So after that, you know, you stick around and climb the ladder or you go do something else.
Yeah. And the advice that the person gave me about working for themselves is she said there's two camps. Most people want to be paid for their passion and or hobbies, irrespective of anyone wants to pay them for their passion or their hobbies. Then they get mad at people, family, friends, and potential customers because we're not as passionate about your passions, hobbies as you are. Yo, that's not how this works.
Not at all.
She said a true sustainable business plan is to find something you're passionate about doing. Step one. Step two is determine, and equally important, if someone will pay you enough money to live the life you want to live for doing that something you're passionate about. And if the answer to that is no, then do step one again.
So basically, do your research.
Yeah. I mean, you can do your passion and you can do your hobby, but if you want someone to pay and compensate you for it, there needs to be alignment. I think most people are just like, and we've seen it. I mean, I'm not going to call nobody out, but I've seen some passive aggressive messages pretty much like clockwork every 72 to 48 hours. Like, oh, y'all not going to get on my pyramid scheme? I knew I didn't have no real friends on this app. This is the last time I'm
you don't support me. You don't support all these haters out here who aren't signing up for my service that you don't need. Like, great. Yeah. Like I can support you. And you know what? I've experienced this in some regards both ways. And I think I learned earlier on that, especially with things like career stuff and even to some degrees like money management, a lot of people don't think that they need that thing until they need that thing. So a lot of people don't think about careers until the point that they're looking at a new job, or a lot of people don't think about how to get their debt under control until they got collectors calling and they realize that their house or something else really important to them, maybe even their relationship, is at risk. And so, you know, sometimes you may have something that you think people need that people may need, but they don't know they need it yet. And instead of wasting your time trying to chase after those people, you want to try to do something where you know that you're serving a market that's interested in what you wanted. But again, it goes back to doing that research, you know, and going outside of those few people who are around you, who you're using as like your business plan and gauge of what the market is. That might not be the case at all.
Yeah, and Steve Jobs has a quote, which I haven't Googled, therefore I'm going to butcher, but it's something to the effect of, paraphrasing, if you wait until the customer knows what they want, you're too late. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to encourage myself to do, if I am going to go this entrepreneur route, which terrifies me, I might add, because of the lack of structure, but I also realize when I take a step back, I'm linear, I'm logical, and that's how my mind works. When I am my hungriest, when my back is to the wall, when all the doubt is out there, that's when my greatest accomplishments have occurred. When I really look back kind of over this 3 decades of life that I have lived, and I think about, you know, when my back was to the wall, that's when I did my best work. When I thought, like, when all the chips were down, I thought I was going to fail, that's when I had my biggest comeback. And so, yes, this unknown scares me. But every time I face the unknown is when I did my best work, my best output or my best outcome was realized.
Yeah. And so, I was going to say, it's important that so even the fact that you know that about yourself, a lot of people don't even know how they're motivated, or like what drives them, you know? And so the fact you even know that is helpful in figuring out what the next step should be.
Yeah. And I think I won't say that I've been more fortunate than others, but, and I think you can relate to this, the writing skill set is just a skill set that I can use. It's a transitional skill set. Like, I can use it in so many different career fields. I think I've talked to some folks who were like, you know, I wish I had something that, you know, I'm good at this and I might be very paid well at that or whatever, but I'm stuck in this niche. Is that because it's not transitional? Like, I can't do this somewhere else. Like, there's no other company. I am the company. And so I think that's been helpful. But yeah, I think also taking the step back and just analyzing that every now, like, what do I need to do? Like, here's what I want to accomplish. Am I the person to do it? What I think I've tried to get better about over the years is probably some humility as well, is, you know what, I want to do X, but me doing X will take thousands of hours. When I know there's someone who can do this in 50 hours, I'm going to go to the person that can do this for me for 50 hours or within 50 hours. And that's something I've been trying to get better at over the years, is making not only purposeful use of my time, but the best use of my time.
Yeah, which I think is something that just comes with age. At first, it's like, have fun, get money. And I've noticed this a lot more now, even with business ideas that I've explored in the past. So, and I've mentioned on a past episode where I was doing career consulting, where I was doing resume reviews and stuff like that. And I got to a point, and this was my fault. You know, I would do these whole, like, you know, free consultation, you know, because I'm hoping that'll then translate to business, or someone sends me something. Can you take a quick look? And next thing you know, 30 minutes or an hour has gone by, and like, I've done it for free. I got to a point where I was like, yo, my time is more valuable than this. And I'm not sure what the exact moment was. It wasn't like I was sitting, sipping tea, looking at a crappy resume. And then I was like, you know what? That's it. But there was a day where I was like, yo, I can't, or I don't want to spend my time doing this unless I'm getting X amount of money. And even if I chose to spend that time sleeping, that's my choice, you know, but it's my time. And I think a lot of us, or most of us, will get to that point somewhere along the way. And I imagine, especially when people start having families and stuff, which I can't speak, you know, too much to that beyond Boobalkins, but like, yo, as you pick up more responsibility outside of that thing that you primarily get paid for, your time becomes more valuable. And then even as you're climbing the ranks, or you go out and do your own thing, that time you spend doing X is taking away from time you could be spending doing Y. And even the idea of the values alignment and having a mission statement, that can even help you figure that out. Like how to use your time, and are you spending your time on the right things? Which I know a lot of us aren't.
Yeah, I'll wrap up with this because I've been talking for quite a while. One thing that I did write down even before I was doing this vision and personal mission statement was be happy. And I mean, that sounds really cliche, because I wasn't even unhappy when I wrote the quote down. But what it was is I was just in this place of content. Like, I was going through the motions, and I was literally in a cycle. Like, I do the exact same thing. I think I was even eating the exact same meals. Yeah. I was like, yo, I need to break out of this cycle. And what that meant to me, how I translated that, was I've gotten, or tried to get more comfortable with, it's still something I'm working through. And I'll take a step back every now and then. I'll stop doing something. I'm like, is this making me happy? And I mean, I don't care how much money it's making me. I don't care what it's netting someone else. I don't care what the other outcome is. But sometimes I'll just take a step back and like, is this exercise, either, especially if I'm going to be doing it over and over again, making me happy? And if the answer to that no is like, I don't have time to be doing things that make me unhappy.
Right.
I mean, and I don't know how that sounds to folks, but I was doing things that weren't making me happy, and they were eating up substantial amount of time. And I can't say I stopped. It's not like every now and then there's going to be something you have to do that you don't like doing that just needs to be done. But the things that are within my control that I don't have to do, that I am making a choice to do, that make me unhappy, I'm like, I'm not going to do that no more.
Nah.
And it is what it is.
Nah. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where I've gotten with things too. And that's why, and when I talk about going into work and being like, yo, I've got this podcast, I'm going to keep doing this podcast, this thing that I'm doing is going to grow. It is something that feels very important and like it's headed in a good direction. If you have questions, I am happy to answer them. I'm going to continue doing it. And if that ever becomes an issue, then I may need to explore options elsewhere. Now, I didn't say it in those exact words because, you know, that probably wouldn't have been the most productive conversation at the end, but I think I made it very clear, pulled it up, you know, talked about where it's going, things we have planned, so that they know it's something that I enjoy doing. And it's something that's always going to be in my mind when I'm thinking about taking on extra projects and other things that are going to require me to spend more time at work. And it's not to say that, you know, I've gotten to a point of complacency with the day job, but I'm thinking about that time investment again. And I'm like, yo, there's certain stuff I want to accomplish with this. There's other goals that I have in mind beyond move to senior X title or manager of X. There are bigger picture things that I'm thinking about that I'm like, yo, I need to create the systems and the time to be able to focus on those things. So with every decision that I'm making, I don't do this with every single decision by day, but I find myself more frequently saying, okay, by doing this now, is this going to free me up time later? So even how I wake up in the morning. Now, I joked with you before the show that I was supposed to get up at 7 a.m. and be productive. Of course, I rolled over and realized what time it is when I laid on my phone and it hurt at like 9:53 a.m. But even decisions like that, like, yo, I need more time to get stuff done outside of work. As much as it pains me, I'm going to start trying to get up an additional hour early. Now, it has been struggly. Very, very struggly, but little things like that might be necessary. So maybe it's getting to work an hour earlier so you can get through all of the stuff that you normally get distracted from doing once everyone else comes into the office, so you can leave when you're supposed to, so you can get home and maybe work on that other thing that you were working on, whether it's a side business or maybe it's just a personal project. I mean, maybe it's a class you wanted to take. Maybe it's going to the gym, because I know work can be a very easy excuse for not going to the gym. I'm too tired. It's dinner time, you know, sleep, nap. Someone really pissed me off at 9:56, so I don't feel like working out at 6:02. I know I've done all this before, I'm hoping other people have done the same. But if not, insert whatever works for you.
Yeah. Only the other thing I would add is I'm going to share this video on at pay balances, as I saw it recently. And I don't really get into all these. I don't even know what you call it, but like that, those happy, that sounds bad, but those happy videos that people post, those uplifting videos, sometimes they're like overkill. It's like, you need to, there's always someone running in slow motion. Like, you need to take the time to smell the roses. I'm like, all right. Yeah. Okay. But there was one that I saw that actually did kind of, you know, it gave me pause, and I'm going to share it on the account. I talked about it on TGOS as well. And he took a timeline. You can do this as well. He took a piece of paper and he marked out from 0 to 80, and he broke it down by 10-year segments. And then he just put a box for the time that you're working. And it was that simple. It was from like 25 to 65. And I mean, when you look at it like that, and then I think he had a 2-minute video, but essentially the question he asked is, what are you doing with this time?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I need to be doing something different with that box. Like, and half of that, well, not half of that, a good portion of that box for me is already used up. And when I look at it on a 10-year scale.
Oh, that's scary. I didn't even think about that part, but go on.
Yeah. I need to be happier more often with that time. And that's what I'm working through right now. I haven't figured it out. It's not like I got the answers, no sway, but I am going through the exercise. And I know now that I've solved questions like this for myself before, once I figured out what the question was. But now it's just, okay, now I have the question, which is what makes me happy. And now I'm searching for a more specific answer versus just going through the motions.
Yeah, that's valuable, man. I actually saw a video from Paul Carrick Brunson. Some folks may know him from some of the relationship stuff that he's done, and also some of the entrepreneurship. He did a video on Instagram, and you can follow him. It's at Paul C. Brunson. And he basically, the short version of the video was, are you truly hustling? And, you know, a lot of people always talk about, you know, we hustling, we got side hustles, we got all this other stuff we're working on. But are we, you know, truly maximizing the free time that we have for those things that are important to us? So he's posted, well, by the time this episode comes out, he's going to have posted a bunch of other stuff since then. So maybe I'll see if I can include this in the show notes. But that's something to think about, whether you're trying to do your own thing, or you're just trying to be happier, are you really taking the steps that are necessary to get wherever it is you want to go? So I'll close my thoughts out on that.
That's all I've got as well.
Cool, man. So I want to thank you all for listening to this episode of Paychecks and Balances. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover on this show or a question that you'd like to hear covered on Q&A, you can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com or send us a voicemail by visiting paychecksandbalances.com and clicking on the orange tab floating on the right side of your screen. It should be there. I just checked. It should be there when this episode comes out. Use it. Let us hear from you so we can talk about it on a future episode.
And don't forget to join the Paychecks and Balances email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. You'll receive the PB Weekly, where we talk top stories found throughout the week, career and money management tips, and a lot more. Again, the link to sign up is paychecksandbalances.com/email.
You struggled through it, but you got through it, which is really important.
I think I got it.
You did, man. And also, don't forget to cop Marcus's book, Debt Free or Die Trying. You can cop that paperback by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/debt-free. And if you're not one into the paper, into the manual book type things, you can also buy the digital copy, the ebook. I couldn't even remember ebook. So you'll be able to find that as well. But anyway, again, thanks for listening. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.